It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this 18th day of May, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That is, of course, where you go if you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you pop into the chat room right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Stockton, Larry, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, discretion is the better part of valor, and who wants to fold space into the center of something hotter than the center of the sun? So he remains Sparky. Every program here, oh, by the way, I'm on time, or almost on time. How about that? I sent out a note earlier today saying that I might be late to the program because I had a doctor's appointment that started about 4:30. But we got started a little bit early, and it was telehealth. And there's something kind of cool about telehealth because there's no driving home from the doctor's office or anything like that. And so turns out I wasn't late after all. Yay! Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Anyway, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so thanks go out this afternoon to get us started to our 18th day of the month subscribers. And that means thanks very kindly indeed to Charlene in Rogues Island. And thank you to our dear friend in Southeast Asia. Thank you to our pal Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you, Grace. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. And thanks as well to our pal Jessica up in the greater Rochester co-prosperity sphere. We were at 950. We are now down to 945. Thank you, Jessica. The message for Todd's Better Than Academy Award performance as the crazy white guy on the previous program. Yeah, Todd does that just a little too well. It's a little scary. But thank you, one and all. And that was a great conversation yesterday evening. It was a real pleasure. That's, I don't think we have any bad ones here, and that's what makes this all so so very exciting and enjoyable to do, and just to see where people's heads are at, where their minds are going, what kind of thoughts are moving and motivating us. But by the same token, it's also Titanic Tuesday. You know, those days when we celebrate Titanic right-wing intellect. The kind of intellect that says, ramming speed, helmsman! we're going to take down that iceberg. And so it is that we have perfect, absolutely model examples of what passes for Titanic intellect among the white wing in this country. And we'll get it. We'll take a run at it. But to start the program the way the program has been starting for a while, and I enjoy this, and I know you do as well. Robin! Transcivility. This was quite a day in history, Joey writes, and to begin with, Charlene's Rogue Island became the first American colony to pass a law abolishing African slavery, but the law was never enforced. And Jeffrey's all over this one.
I did not realize Rhode Island even had slavery, and I really think they should have been more concerned about abolishing Southern slavery in places like Mississippi rather than trying to change African laws. Hell, let Africa make their own damn laws.
No, Jeffrey, it's not that Rhode Island didn't try to ban it. Oh, why do I bother? Interesting question, Jeffrey, but speaking of Mississippi, on this date in 1863, the Siege of Vicksburg began during the Civil War, ending on July the 4th with a Union victory. And the people of Vicksburg would not celebrate the 4th of July for another 100 years, sore losers. In 1977, Joey's parents took Joey on vacation to the Deep South, and we made a stop at the Vicksburg Battleground site, very sobering, and one of those times I will never forget as it reminded me of Gettysburg, a venue we had visited in 75 on a trip to see my great aunt in Lancaster, PA. Jeffrey ponders,
I still don't understand why they would have a call of war civil.
Jeffrey's just full of interesting points this evening. Speaking of Mississippi, a week ago today, Johnny Cash received a Mississippi Country Music Trail Award for getting drunk one night and picking some old lady's flowers in her backyard. Johnny Cash spent the night in jail and wrote a song about the experience called Starkville City Jail, which he eventually sang to the inmates at San Quentin in 1969. Jeffrey, there's no singing.
Now, wait a minute. So Johnny Cash got drunk and deflowered some old lady and all he got was a night in jail?
Has Jeffrey been sampling the Long Island iced teas before the program again?
Well, Johnny sure got away with that one. I guess old Johnny got some serious white privilege going on there. Johnny got some serious white privilege and some serious cash bail.
Oh, God. Okay, Jeffrey, because white people will never realize the monetary value of white privilege. I'll also add, Joey says, my very first concert that I ever attended was a Johnny Cash concert at the Ohio State Fair in 1972, and on cue, Johnny Cash came out and said,
Hi, my name is Johnny Cash.
That's halfway to a bad John Wayne.
I often wondered why Johnny Cash always came on stage and introduced himself every time just like that. The only reason I can figure out is that some of his Southern followers were too dumb to realize who Johnny Cash was, even though they'd purchased a ticket to a Johnny Cash concert, and they claim the South will rise again. But not the general IQ.
Whew! Boy, that giraffe does hate the South, doesn't he? And speaking of the South, on this day in 1933, FDR signed a measure creating the Tennessee Valley Authority. It may be the most successful governmental socialistic works program ever created. You know, if you sort of overlook the horrible mistakes they made building nuclear plants and the huge, huge, huge wall of toxic, even radioactive coal ash that they sent down the river a few years. But no, it did save lives. Among other things, the building of the dams along the Tennessee River made the place where I was born habitable. Yeah. Because yellow fever had plagued the Tennessee River Valley through northwest Alabama, well, for a long damn time. Dam, see what I did there? Wheeler Dam, Wilson Dam. They built that. Never mind. Jeffrey would like to, well,
Jeffrey continues then. Now, if Joe Manchin would lend Joe Biden some authority, the president could create the greatest works program in the history of the country, which would include a huge replica of Joe Manchin's head carved into one of West Virginia's many mountains, a la Mount Rushmore, but this would be called Mount Manchin, and the whole entire works program project would be called the Manchin Expansion. See, we have to get creative when we start trying to answer the question that that bedevils the country to this day. What does Joe Manchin want? Maybe he'd like, you know what? We got a lot of mountaintop removal sites. We could claim that carving his face into the side of a blown-up hill was some kind of reclamation. How about that? Ah, well, we're just going to let Jeffrey wrap things up here. I'll have the entire Horn community know that I was okay with Prince changing himself into a symbol, and I'm just fine with Bob becoming Robin, but last night when Todd tried to change himself from an intelligent, intellectual, erudite black man into a white racist member of the KKK John Birch Society card-carrying cracker white man, well, I just could not cope. I was just hoping this was a bit, because that kind of a transition would have been just too much for this community. I was just waiting for Robin to ask Hick Todd the age-old question that you posed to an ignorant Southern racist Confederate flag-waving cracker KKK John Birch Society bigot. And that is, how do you spell Mississippi? The normal response from the cracker crowd is, which one, the river or the state? Oh, no. How do you spell Tennessee, the river or the state? Oh, geez, Kentucky, the river or the state? Oh, Jeffrey. But everybody knows, no, Emma come first, then I come, then two asses, they come, then I come again, then pee twice, no, then I come again. You're disgusting. Just spelling Mississippi. Well, okay, let's wrap this up.
You know, if Todd could actually pull off the titanic task of transing from a black man to a white man, then hell, the possibilities would be endless, and maybe somebody like Marjorie Trader Green, Gangrene Cue Ball, could actually become a... Yes, wonders would never cease if Todd could trans to a white man, and if that was possible, then even Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cue Ball could actually trans into a civil human being. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 18th day of May, with Giraffery trying to stop this country's current uncivil war. When civil hands lead to uncivil strife. Yeah, even Shakespeare played with that line. That, by the way, is from Romeo and Juliet, is it not? Anyway, there's the $25 Uncivil War Challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffery. And it is so kind the way that they do this, giving an opportunity to take an early bite out of the fundraising. Well, goodness gracious, that would get us under $800 as far as the deficit's concerned. We're rapidly closing in on actually finishing funding last week. That's awesome. We are $245 away from finishing Friday. Wouldn't that be awesome? It would. And meeting Joey and Giraffe's Uncivil War Challenge would get us down to only $195 away from being done with last week. Yay. So that gets us off to a rousing start. And well, it being Titanic Tuesday, we probably will be talking about Joe Manchin somewhere down the way. But instead, or not instead, but before we do that, you know, when you guys make the effort, which I deeply appreciate, to put together, and that's not a gendering thing, you guys. I mean, that's just you guys. I think it's gender neutral at this point in time, although it isn't really. But when y'all take the time and effort to really pull together thoughts and send them to me to share with the community, I'm honored by that.
And I'm thrilled by that. And it goes to show me that, it goes to confirm what I have known for almost two decades now, and that is the real brain power that lies behind progressive liberal broadcasting as compared to the sitting around picking their teeth with their toenail clippings, grunting and barking and hooting and howling and squealing and screeching that passes for intellect over on the flying monkey maggot right. And so, because the story remains in the news, no matter how desperately I would like for it not to be, because I hate war. May I digress one more time, Ron and Raleigh asks. I want to remind folks about some history. In 1987, at the behest of the U.S., the U.K., and Israel, the Palestinian people held an election for who should represent them. Hamas, to the chagrin of the U.S., U.K., and Israel, won the election. Israel wanted to get rid and be rid of the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization. This is a classic case, as Braun points out, of be careful of your wish and what you wish for. When the Israeli Defense Forces demolished a 14-story building in Gaza, they said the reason was that there were Hamas in the building. The question I want to ask is, if Hamas is the duly elected representative of the Palestinian people, wouldn't it make sense for them to have offices somewhere? Because that's also what they're saying about why, the AP offices and the Al Jazeera offices and all those journalism. Well, it was just their misfortune that they had offices at the same place where there was a guy from Hamas. You know, a dude from Hamas. A guy. And Israel seems to be having, and this is me, not Ron and Raleigh, but it occurred to me that Israel seems to be having a bit of a problem sorting out the same thing that bedeviled us in Iraq and Afghanistan. How many times during the course of those wars did we see some loud, noisy headline that said, the United States today knocked off Al-Qaeda's number two? Well, there was always going to be another number two. In more than one way. I began to wonder if, after a time, if knocking off Al-Qaeda's number two meant that we were actually blowing up porta-potties somewhere in the Hindu Kush. Because the Israeli government has said, we killed off the number two guy in Hamas. Do they not understand that there's a promotional structure? That vacuums are always filled? I'm having a hard time understanding that get rid of Hamas or we'll kill more of your children. You know, that's not that. Hamas has got to do, y'all, yeah, listen, okay? Okay, we're out of here. No! As more and more wags and pundits are pointing out, the two beneficiaries to all of this bloodshed and the dead little Palestinian children brought out of piles of rubble. The two people who benefit most from that are Hamas and its leadership. Okay, two organizations. Let's say organizations, not people. And the hardcore right-wing, arguably fascist government of Bibi Netanyahu, who is, I don't say this as hyperbole, I think it's true, as we say it here in the hills, crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass. But anyway, let me get back to what Ron and Raleigh wrote. Wouldn't it make sense for them to have offices somewhere, Hamas? The dynamic in this conflict is similar to professional wrestling. In wrestling, you have the heels, H-E-E-L-S, and those are the bad guys. And the baby faces, those are the good guys. During a match, the heel will use a foreign object to strike the baby face when the usually vision-impaired ref isn't watching. The baby face will then retaliate, which the ref will see. This is also part and parcel of an old rule in football. The refs never see the first infraction. It's the retaliation that gets you the flag. But anyway, in Israel, Ron says, the dynamic is that the Israelis attack the Al-Aqsa Mosque during worship at the close of Ramadan. Meanwhile, in Sheikh Jarrah, Israeli police and army are strong-arming residents and stealing their homes. In case people didn't know, Sheikh Jarrah was where the Jordanians moved the Palestinians in 1948 after their land was given to the Jews to found their state. Now Israel wants to steal this land as well, and Israeli courts will, as usual, find bogus Israeli land claims valid and Palestinian deeds and court papers invalid. Fred Gutenberg, and I've got him in the stack, the father of one of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School victims, called out Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for her truth-telling concerning the current conflict in Gaza, calling her an anti-Semite. Mr. Gutenberg wants people to be sympathetic about his family's loss, yet can't seem to gin up any concern about dead Palestinian children. Alan Dershowitz called Bernie Sanders a self-hating Jew. I don't remember this scumbag calling Stephen Miller a self-hating Jew during the Trump regime when, as Stephen Miller's own relatives said, if Stephen Miller's policies had been in place, the family that produced him never would have made it into the United States. Concluding, Ron says, since Israeli politicians have declared that being Jewish is not just a religion or ethnic identity, it is a nationality, and any criticism of Israel is de facto anti-Semitic, I guess I'll just have to wear that hat. I'm tired of being angry all the time about our feckless politicians not even being able to utter the word Palestinian. A pox on their houses. Well, I'm not wearing the hat. And just because somebody says it does not mean it is true. There's plenty of examples of that going around in this country. Some which maybe I'm more aware of now than I might have been aware of before, but I probably would have been aware of it anyway. That's just sophistry. If I criticize the hardcore, toxic, genocidal-leaning right-wing government of Brazil, it does not mean that I hate indigenous Brazilians or that I hate Brazilians who are descended from European colonists. It means specifically what I do, that I despise the government of Jair Bolsonaro. And I do. But nobody's... they'd be out of their mind to say that that meant that I was anti-Brazilian or anti-indigenous people. It's fascism that I despise. And it's hard to look at the hardcore right-wing Likudnik government of Bibi Netanyahu and not think that one is looking at a fascist who will do anything to maintain power. Oh, the neighbors are beating the shit out of something over there. What the hell? Oh, one of these days we'll have a soundproof booth. Getting more vigorous. It went from whack, whack, whack to whack, whack, whack. No, those are the ducks next door. Well, thank you, Billable Rick. Cowbell for you. I'll take it. Robin, you glossed over this one too fast, and it's restaurant quality. When the U.S. kept announcing that it had gotten Al-Qaeda's number two, I began to wonder if we'd dropped a bomb on a porta potty in the Hindu Kush. I was proud of that. I just didn't know that. See, I count on y'all to, you know, sort of get those little things as they fly by. I understand Ron's frustration. I understand a lot of people's frustration. God knows anybody who's paying attention to this conflict. And calling, you know, finally, and remember, please, President Biden served for years as the chair, or either the chair or the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And that means that, he's got a deep and abiding fascination, sympathy, pick your term, for Israel because of the nature of the U.S. policy thereunto applying. So even he, by the time the program was over yesterday, the White House was announcing that he had said he wanted to see a ceasefire. Now, he couched it in terms of wanting to see the ceasefire as soon as Israel felt like it was okay. But it was a step forward. I personally still think that it is inappropriate for the United States of America. Well, now let's do this by analogy. There is a hellhole on this planet. It goes by the name of Yemen. And that hellhole is a hellhole because the United States sells horse gagging, and they gag on human blood, by the way, loads of precision, highly effective things that kill people, lots of people, to the puissant, peace-loving, serene, noble, royal house of Ibn Saud. Who then use those precision instruments that kill a lot of people really fast and really dead. Against mamas, daddies, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandmas, grandpas, neighbors, brothers-in-laws, sister-in-laws, pregnant mommies, mommies who already have babies on the ground, and indeed, against the babies themselves. And we had no problem whatsoever on the progressive left raising a hue and cry against that vicious conduct, to the point that the Biden administration even made some noises in recent days about maybe it's not such a good idea to be selling those precision instruments that kill so many people, so dead, so fast, to the noble, serene, gracious, puissant, royal house of Ibn Saud. Well, it's not a matter of selling to Israel. We give it to them. We give it to them. And then the Israelis use it to make buildings turn into dirt and dust and rock and rubble, out of which the still and lifeless bodies of little Palestinian children are dragged. I think that's immoral. Outside and apart from the question of the Israeli government's willingness to lay broken Palestinian babies' bodies on a blood-soaked altar. If they're going to do it, why should we be part of that moral decrepitude? Asking for a friend, I guess. And I hate this issue because it divides us. And I hate this issue because it is without solution. And everything I would say about this, I have probably said before. So, except to say that I object to the killing of innocent children for political ends, well, what else is there to say? I support Israel's right to defend itself. And I support the right of Palestinian 5-year-olds to become Palestinian 6-year-olds. And Palestinian adults. And Palestinian old people. And in large part, I think much of the world is with me on that. But as that great philosopher Mayella Yule once said, fictionally, all your mammon and all your Miss Mayella and it don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch. It don't come to nothing. Just kind of makes me hope that there really isn't some great judgment day, some great getting up morning out there. Because there's a whole lot of people who, if the question is asked, well, what did you do when they were killing the children?
You'll say,
not much, really. Wasn't much to be done. Because they were going to do it anyway. I never see the stories about the little Palestinian babies' bodies being dragged from the rubble. And, you know, these aren't made-up babies. These aren't crisis actor babies. Alex Jones. These are real flesh and blood children. In one of the most awful places on earth. Where they don't have much of a chance to begin with. But the United States has known people like that, too. And I think of a place in Colorado called Sand Creek. And I think of a white man named Colonel John Chivington, who had some United States Army cavalry soldiers under his command. And they found an encampment of indigenous people. And they crept up on it. Prepared to attack. And someone asked Colonel Chivington, the story goes, Colonel, what do we do about the women and children? To which American Army Colonel John Chivington replied, kill them. Kill them all. Nits. Make lice. Go well. Yes, Brother Deacon Asa, you are correct. You probably will be Sodomized by Murder Hornets in Hell for that one. And Brother Deacon Ace asked, wait a minute, with Todd, what if Todd's doing an act all the other times he calls in, and that voice we heard was the real Todd? You know, Star Trek alternate universe and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And before I even mentioned Colonel Chivington, Lamar the Magnificent asked, oh, Robin, the reason why Israel is against a two-state solution, with a two-state solution, you can't steal the land. Does the American Indian ring a bell? It rings an entire carillon, Lamar. Mm-hmm. So, two nights in a row, and until this end, it'll probably be there every night, and we won't be able to talk our way around it. And this is, after all, a living archive of history happening, of, you know, the first draft of history. That's what they call the news. Ugh! And at least we have a record of our objection. Not that that much matters. Or goes very far. Yes, yes, Steve in New York. It's 5:31 on Tuesday, May the 18th. Is the program live as of right now? Yes, it most assuredly is. It just sounds like something from a couple of nights ago. Or a week ago. Because when it comes to the slaughter of the Palestinians, it's all SSDD. Same shit. Different day. Yeah. But we got other stuff, and we're going to make the best of it. In addition to bombing the AP and Al Jazeera headquarters, it turns out that, well, let's put it this way. There's still a pandemic burning across and around the globe. And in some places, it is burning hotter than others. Poor South Asia, Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Nepal, have all just been, beset by this plague. And everywhere that gets hit with it struggles to come up with the fundamental necessities for dealing with SARS-CoV variant 2 from 2019. And in order to cope with the pandemic, you have to be able to first identify it. Because before you get vaccines, all you can do is try to quarantine away from it. And in vastly populous areas like India, that becomes extremely difficult. You know, it's hard to really wrap our heads around it, but just being able to engage in social distance is a matter of privilege. Shots are a privilege. Quarantine is in its own right a privilege. But ultimately, you're going to have some science if you're going to survive it. And that means being able to test for the coronavirus. And in Gaza, they had one lone lab at the Palestinian Ministry of Health. And the Israelis bombed the living fuck out of it. For any other regime on planet Earth, this would be a war crime. Bombing a country's only laboratory with the ability to test and identify for a deadly virus causing a pandemic. The Ghazi al-Shwa building that houses the Palestinian Ministry of Health is 6 stories tall. And 3 missiles, guided precision missiles, not rockets hurled into the air like rocks. Rockets. Israel sent 3 precision-guided high-explosive missiles, at least, and wiped out the upper floors of the building. Now, when they hit that building, well, there was some collateral damage. And one of those was the main coronavirus laboratory. The only coronavirus laboratory. They also managed to damage an orphanage, a high school for girls, and, of course, the Palestinian Ministry of Health. Because Gaza is a tightly compacted, it's the world's largest concentration camp. And so everything is built next to everything else. And, you know, they know. They know. And so when the excuse is made, well, you know, we do our best. Well, clearly your best is not enough. Not good enough. I've heard that one, and it gags my gut. We certainly try to avoid killing children. Well, apparently you're not trying hard enough. Because you're still killing children. And so in places like the UN... the diplomats mumble phrases like proportionality. Proportionality does not matter to a fascist government. It just doesn't. Abu Ahmed Abu Ful witnessed the airstrikes, and he said, "If the Ministry of Health is not safe, then there is no safe place in the Gaza Strip. This is a war crime, and the world cannot remain silent, and so silent we are not." No. Dr. Youssef Abu al-Rish is the undersecretary of the Gaza Health Ministry, and he pointed out that the facility that they had for testing for coronavirus is now inoperable. And that some of the people, that even if it were operable, some of the people who did the testing and the lab work, well, they're inoperable too because they've been blown to pieces. Might not be dead, but they're not going to be very good at testing for coronavirus. And because of the number of people who have been maimed and wounded, their ability to use the few paltry vaccines that they have, well, that's also been foreclosed. Undersecretary of Health, Dr. Youssef Abu al-Rish, said, "Targeting the Ministry of Health building at Al Ramal Clinic and the medical staff is a heinous crime, aimed at preventing the ministry from continuing its humanitarian work in saving the lives of the wounded and providing health care to citizens. The international community must hold the occupation accountable for its heinous and ongoing crimes against medical personnel and health institutions." over at MSNBC, Mehdi Hassan, described the situation as horrifying. It was bad enough when Palestinians in Gaza weren't able to get vaccinated, but now reportedly to lose their only coronavirus testing lab is beyond words. Over at Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, Eli Sock said the horrendous attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure that we are witnessing in Gaza are inexcusable and intolerable. Neither of which the government of Bibi Netanyahu much gives a flying fuck about. I mean, in his off hours, it's not like Bibi's sitting there in sackcloth and ashes, weeping and wailing and gnashing his teeth. The only way Bibi Netanyahu ever does that is if he is removed from power and actually has to face justice for the, you know, crimes that he's committed. And I'm not even talking about against Palestinians. I'm talking about the crimes that he's committed against the Israeli people. He's a crook. He's a crook. And maybe that's part of the problem. Crooked people do crooked things. And maybe another part of the problem is the fact that we treat him like a dignified leader of a country, when in fact, he's the same. He's the same kind of thug that Donald Trump is. He just doesn't quite burble as stupidly. If you ever want a picture, because we've talked about this in the past, people have said, well, you know, at least, you know, maybe we dodged a bullet with Trump. Can you imagine how awful things could have gotten, as awful as they got? Can you imagine how awful things would have gotten if Donald Trump had had the brains that God gave a stomped gosling? Boy, we'd have really been fucked then. And the conversation that flows from that is, yeah, and let's see who that might be. Oh, look, there's Josh Hawley. Oh, look, there's Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Oh, look, there's Tom Cotton. Yeah. And it is frightful. But the thing is, half a world away, Bibi Netanyahu is that. He is the dangerously insane fascist thug that Donald Trump could only dream of being, but couldn't get his ignorance and his ego in check long enough or leave the Adderall rails alone long enough to actually be it. Great pals, Trump and Bibi. And Ron and Raleigh mentioned Fred Gutenberg, for whom I have immense sympathy, endless sympathy, and considerable respect. But when he said, Ted Cruz and I agree on almost nothing else, but at least we agree that Israel needs to be able to slaughter Palestinians at will, a whole lot of that respect went away. The sympathy and the empathy did not, but a great deal of the respect did. But as mentioned, President Biden did tell, or in the news report lingo, express support for a ceasefire. And the woman who is a member of the House of Representatives from Minnesota, Representative Ilhan Omar, whom Nitwit Nero has done all in his power to try to stochastically terrorize. Well, Representative Omar said, finally, our delay in supporting a ceasefire has caused the slaughter of children and destruction of lives. Now Biden has to push for an end to the occupation. Well, that ain't gonna happen, ma'am. Again, because of the fetish. And you know the fetish of which I speak. But it is Titanic Tuesday. We've almost reached the end of the filibuster. And it's funny, some of the contributions that came in last night, thank goodness Jeremy pointed out that he'd already taken care of Joey and Giraffe's challenge, or else I wouldn't have seen it. Brian, if you're out there, I found out sometime about mid-morning, I finally got my email notification. Ugh. But nonetheless, I did just check, and the $25 civil challenge has not yet been met, so we're still trying to get down below $900. Thank you, Joey and Giraffe. We'll get to some other Titanic intellect. I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut. The second Pfizer shot kicked my ass today. Haven't been this sick in years. Living off of water and Tylenol. A friend dropped off some ginger ale, which is helping. Weird headaches all day long, upset stomach, queasiness, sore arm, quad muscle aches. The day before, my FSH muscle pains were aggravated, just like with the first shot. Very weird. Chills and feverish on and off. Could not function. Didn't get out of bed till 10:30 a.m. Did I mention just how much I despise Donald Jackhole Trump? Because if he wasn't so fucking inept, we may not have to be going through this torture, but I digress. He is still traumatizing us. Again, I digress. It will be an early night to bed tonight. Well, I know we're all hoping you feel better, and I don't know if you can handle it, but if the Tylenol ain't working, try ibuprofen. I said, we do. We sincerely hope that you get to feeling better, Darlene. You are a dear friend of this community. Oh, let's see. Yes. The answer to your question, Trey, is yes. Does the evangelical love for Israel have anything to do with the belief about converting them all when Jesus comes back, and then if they don't convert, they all die? Well, they don't all die. They all get the Christians get to kill them. How Jesus of them, if that's true. And it is true, Trey. It's absolutely true. Oh, and I mentioned that I had the doctor's appointment. I was going to be late. And thank you, Andrea. Thank you kindly, Andrea. I hope you're okay. I'm fine. I've never been better. And this was a very happy doctor's appointment. On the other hand, damning with faint praise. No worries, Robin. I've been so tired lately. Whenever I turn on the podcast, I get into it for about 5 minutes, and I'm out cold. Then I'm out cold for 8 hours. I have that effect on a lot of people, especially when I'm not ranting and raving and screaming, which I'm really trying not to do. Not with this issue. Where do they get that? They get it from something called millennialism or premillennialism, end times prophecy analysis, Trey. It's crazy. It is, if you buy into Christianity, it is a disgusting heresy. Not that I'm any, you know, arbiter of what is and isn't heretical, but that kind of crap is deemed heretical by most of the major Christian religions of the earth, but it doesn't slow down American Christianity from buying into it. The line of, it was invented by an Englishman, I think his name was Darby, back in the 19th century, I think, maybe the 18th. But yep, Jesus is going to come back in his holy roles, and he's going to be pissed. He's going to say, all of y'all got to confess that I'm the Lord and Savior, and if you don't, my boys over here are going to gig you like frogs. Ah, thank you, Jeremy. I just saw that. It came in timely this time. Thank you, Jeremy. Joey and Giraffe are covered. Thank you so much. It is deeply appreciated. So now we've gotten under $900, and that's awesome. But it's Titanic Tuesday, and you don't get one of these very often. This is just beautiful. Now, just by way of background, a couple of weeks ago, France was shaken by a letter signed by a bunch of disgruntled malcontents in their military saying, well, if shit doesn't change, we might have a civil war in France. And that's not that is not a phrase, civil war, to be uttered lightly. Even if the maggots did actually go, some of them did go to the insurrection on January 6th, as I pointed out yesterday evening, wearing Trump Civil War t-shirts. They had t-shirts made. Mm-hmm. How about that? Well, now, I guess by virtue of, them Frenchies, they read a letter. Why don't we write one? And so what happened was that a bunch of retired generals, maybe an admiral or two, signed off on an open letter that accused, and you can't help but laugh at this, accused President Biden of being a Marxist. Retired Major General John Bolduc, he's running for Senate in New Hampshire, signed the letter. Vice Admiral John Poindexter, who should be rotting in prison for his role in the Iran-Contra scam, except for the fact that he was pardoned by George H.W. Bush at the behest of one Bill Pepe the Frog Barr to prosecution. He signed the letter, too. He was National Security Advisor to old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. They gave themselves a name, Flag Officers for America. Retired U.S. generals and admirals defending the Constitution. Mm-hmm. We're retired military leaders who pledged to support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, under God, in the universe. Amen. Again, all enemies, foreign and domestic, that it wasn't Donald Trump or Republican voters. I'm adding a lot here and there. Although retired from active service, each of us feels bound by that oaf. No, I'm not talking about Trump, not that oaf. That oaf what we tookin to do what we can in our capacity today to protect our nation from threats to her freedom! Okay? So over 150 retired generals and admirals signed the open letter.
Mm-hmm. Our nation is in deep peril. We are in a fight for our survival as a constitutional public like no other time since our founding in 1776. By the way, that was not the date of our founding. No, it wasn't. The Declaration of Independence was a propaganda document that was meant to garner support for declaring independence from Britain, but we didn't really come up with a viable, feasible government until 1787, but, you know, they're just retired generals and admirals, so we can't be accusing them of knowing anything about American history. The conflict is between supporters of socialism and Marxism versus supporters of constitutional freedom and liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Woo. Without fair and honest elections that accurately reflect the will of the people, our constitutional republic is lost. Well, maybe that's a true statement, except we had one of those elections that was fair and honest and showed Nitwit Nero getting his ass bounced out of the White House. Election integrity demands ensuring there is one legal vote cast and counted per citizen. Legal votes are identified by state legislatures, approved controls using government IDs, verified signatures, etc. Today, many are calling such common sense controls racist in an attempt to avoid having fair and honest elections. In other words, you can only have a fair and honest election, according to these goobers. You can only have that if you make sure that some folks don't vote. You know, some folks that you don't want to vote in the first place, right? H.R. 1 and S.1, if passed, would destroy election fairness and allow Democrats to forever remain in power, violating our Constitution and ending our representative republic. No, what it might end was the ability of Republicans to stop people they don't want to vote from voting, and, well, Republicans have admitted that in point of fact. North Carolina comes to mind. An actual finding from the federal court. An actual admission from the Republicans. Well, I mean, yeah, what we figured is, you know, if you start letting black people vote who's lost, then we ain't going to be Republicans in power no more. I mean, we done got Tim Scott over there in the Senate. What more do they want? We let them have Barack Hussein Obama, for 8 damn years. They can't be happy. Mm-hmm. The current administration, this was apparently written by a close confidant of Nitwit Nero, because current administration is capitalized in the C and the A, has launched a full-blown assault on our constitutional rights in a dictatorial manner, bypassing the Congress with more than 50 executive orders quickly signed. Well, I mean, does it really matter the speed with which an executive order is signed? I mean, what's the difference between signing it in 1 second and, oh, I don't know, 3.5? Executive orders! Executive orders! You know, that Donald Trump, he never used no executive orders. Because he loved America. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it goes on and on, page after page. And then there's the signature page, and that's where the Titanic Tuesday parts comes in. There are apparently a lot of cranks in the ranks of the retired generals and admirals. But it's one name on that list.
that sort of stood out. Because they were just so damn eager to get names on that paper. They'd put, you know, if you had a pulse, they'd pretty much let you put your name. This is how we know it came out of Mar-a-Lardass. Because one of the officers who's the retired officers whose name appears on the statement of DERP is, of course, that famous conqueror of the ocean blue and the denizens of the deep. I'm talking, of course, about Rear Admiral Jack Mehoff. Really? Rear Admiral Jack Mehoff signed the Biden is a Marxist letter. God, you can't make this shit up. And of course, the maggots are that stupid. Well, yeah, oh hell, I remember old Admiral Mehoff. Yeah, him and me, we had some. We sat down and drank down a whole bottle of Jack Daniels one time at the Officers Club in Pearl. Yeah, Jack Mehoff. I tell you what, that's a man's man's what that is, Rear Admiral Jack Mehoff. You know, it didn't matter where you was. Jack Mehoff was always there for you. I mean, he'd give you the shirt off his back. He'd certainly give you a hand anywhere. Wouldn't matter. Golf course, he'd get Jack Mehoff, he'd give you a hand. He'd give you a hand in the bathroom if you needed one. One time we was traveling, Jack Mehoff gave me a hand in the back seat of the limousine. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm laughing at my own joke. I'm ashamed of myself. Yeah. The best part of it, though, is that the guy who got through and signed the letter as Rear Admiral Jack Mehoff is a, the publication Task and Purpose, they found Rear Admiral's Jack Mehoff's name on the list in the first place. Well, it turns out that Jack Mehoff name was given to retired Army Major General Joseph Arbuckle. He retired in 2000. And when Jack Mehoff, Rear Admiral Jack Mehoff, signed the letter, retired General Arbuckle wrote back and said, "Thank you for your support. Hoo-ah! Your name will be added to the letter today. Hoo-ah! Thank you for standing tall. Hoo-ah!" You know, they eventually caught it and took the name off the list. But the Task and Purpose publication said it was actually done by a retired submariner. And you got to remember, the Navy submariners are among the most thoroughly psychologically tested officers we have. And they're psychologically tested among the enlisted ranks, too. Because, you know, when you got to ride around in a little metal tube under the water for a long time, it can make you a little crazy if you're a little crazy to start with. And so in this case, a retired submariner told Task and Purpose that he signed on as Rear Admiral Jack Mehoff because the whole letter was, and this is a quote, "fucking absurd." Because it is. It's absolutely cuckoo bananas. It's nuts. Joe Biden, hardcore Marxist. But the thing is, the list has more than 100 real names of real live retired officers. which in turn makes me think that there's probably deep flaws within the officer corps of the United States military. I mean, sure, you're bound to have one bad apple or so, but when it's a fairly small universe, the universe of generals and admirals. And when you can find 125 of them who are retired who will swear that Joe Biden is a bomb-throwing commie, well now, that probably means that while they weren't retired, while they were active duty, those were some dangerous, dangerous dumb bastards. A whole bunch of, I don't know, General Jack D. Rippers. You remember the general from Dr. Strangelove? You ever seen a Russian drink a glass of water, Mandrake? Russians don't drink water. What do they drink? They drink vodka. That's what they drink, vodka, Mandrake. You know, there's a plan out there to put fluoride, Mandrake, fluoride in little children's drinking water. Fluoride in children's ice cream. Imagine that, fluoride. And that's why we have to protect our precious bodily fluids. Ah, yes, Jack, that's wonderful. What we need is a little cold water on the back of the neck, Jack, and the code. A little cold water on the back of the neck and the code. Yes, yes, yes. Fix us right up. Regarding Rear Admiral Jack Meoff, Brother Deacon Asa says, so you're telling us that the letter was signed by a handful of retired seamen, among which the name Jack Meoff stood erect? Oh, my God, that's pro. A handful of retired seamen, among whom the name Jack Meoff stood erect. Yeah, that's cute. Oh, good news coming from Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Subject line, Moderna, all clear. Karen and I received our second Moderna injection on May the 4th. Like our friend Darlene, Karen was knocked down sick the next day. So much so, she even called out of work. And that's something she rarely does. The good news is, we're now 14 days out and are all clear. Please tell Darlene to hang in there, for it will get better. That's wonderful, and thank you for the kind sentiments, Steve. Considering Marxism and socialism are political terms, Trey in Kentucky Stan says, I really don't think these generals know the difference. Truth? Absolutely. Wait, though, Trey says, I'm confused. Is Joe Biden a Marxist communist? Just asking. Oh, well, I mean, all you got to do is ask him over at ONAN, the network that spills its news upon the ground, or Newsmuck, or Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. They'll tell you that Joe Biden is not just a Marxist. He's a Marxist, socialist, communist, Rosicrucian, Bilderberger, Illuminati, Bohemian Grover, and Amway salesman. Just freedom. Yeah. This is Conversation Radio, and I relish the conversations. If you've got something on your mind, feel free to bring it to the program. You know how to do that, of course. On Skype, it's Bob Kincaid Horn. Got to find time to work on that. And on the stress line, well, you get there by ringing in at 844-843-4676. 844-843-4676. the horn. I've heard about it. I have not seen the footage. I was kind of busy this afternoon. Flavio asking, did you see Biden having fun with the people in Detroit? They were eating him up. I bet you Julius Geezer is seething. Oh, I know he's seething because it wasn't long before the program when I got yet another press release from Save America PAC. And as Darlene points out, he is still traumatizing America.
Good news for Georgia and the Republican Party. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan won't be running again for office. He was the one who, along with Governor Brian Kemp, stopped the Georgia State Senate from doing the job they wanted to do on the 2020 presidential election fraud.
Stopped them from doing the job they wanted to do. Oh, it was a job, all right. They were going to job it.
Duncan's fight against election fraud made him unelectable. His former top aide, Chip Lake, said that the lieutenant governor would not win another term in office. Lake said, "I think he was an accident, and this is what happens when accidents happen in politics. They become one and done. Now maybe the Georgia State Senate and House will build up the courage to expose the large-scale presidential election fraud which took place in their otherwise wonderful state. Let them just look at the state senate in Arizona to find out what leadership and patriotism is all about."
There's only one problem. Even Republicans at this point are calling out that derpy as fuck fraudulent vote recount in Arizona Stan. And I mean, there is some world-class stupid going on there. We know all about the magnifying glasses as the neo-maxi zoom dweebies go looking for bamboo in the ballots to prove that they were manufactured in China. But Stephen Richard, the Republican Maricopa County recorder, was all over media today, and he's done. He's done. He's not putting up with the stupid anymore. He spoke with who was it? Ari Berman on CNN today. John Berman. I'm sorry. And well, I won't say that hilarity ensued, but.
Good morning to viewers here in the United States and around the world. It is Tuesday, May 18th.
It definitely is. And let's skip a bit.
Wow, this is unhinged. I'm literally looking at our voter registration database on my other screen right now. We can't indulge these insane lies any longer as a party, as a state, as a country. That Arizona official joins me now, Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer. He runs Maricopa County's election department and is a longtime Republican. Thanks so much for being with us, Recorder. You weren't speaking out. You weren't really going public with this, but you are now because you say you were exasperated. Exasperated at what?
Yeah, no. Well, thanks, John, for having me on. I would imagine I'm the first county recorder you've had on your show, probably, but such are the times. You know, it was one thing with the audit when they were looking at UV lights and they were looking for bamboo fibers in the paper and they were using the wrong color pens. But when they...
Wait. It was one thing? So that was something up with which we would put, I guess?
They just accuse us too many times of breaking the law. They've defamed our good employees too many times. They've defamed the hardworking people here. And just we're humans. We're all humans and we have our limits. And so the Board of Supervisors and I, almost all of whom are Republican, said enough's enough. And you heard that from Chairman Sellers.
You say enough's enough. And you listed some of the things, whether it be checking for bamboo, using the ultraviolet light. But there's other things on this list. Accusations that ballots flown in from South Korea. Allegations, literally, that chickens ate some of the ballots and then the chickens were incinerated, I guess. What are some of the other crazy things that are being thrown out?
Yeah, I mean, that chickens one is probably pretty top of the charts. But, you know, we still hear about Hugo Chavez. The damage done against Dominion is irrevocable and will never be unrung. And I just hear these things time after time. And some Republicans approach this by saying, okay, we'll continue looking into it for the 15th time. I would encourage them to say, no, that's wrong. That's a lie. I'm sorry you've been lied to, but it's a lie.
Lied to by whom?
By anyone who's perpetuating this, the big lie. Which, we Sidney Powell, I think, was the progenitor of the Dominion claims.
Who else? You called one of them unhinged.
Yeah. I mean, what the president said in his latest news release was, it was just dumbfounding because I was sitting there and I said it was pretty much tantamount to saying that the pencil that was sitting on front of my desk right in front of me does not exist. And I got that letter from him from a supporter who said, Stephen, what gives? Why are you deleting files? And this person's good judgment means a lot to me. And so I was just tired, because how do you respond to that? Well, the former president of the United States just said that. Well, I'm sorry, Vicky, but that's just not true. And I'm looking at it right now.
What do you think is driving these lies? I guess I'm not necessarily asking you to get into the former president's head, but all these other people, including the Republicans in your own state government, who are pushing these lies.
Yeah, I think it's a first mover problem. And I think there's a lot of fear that if you stand out against this, you will lose your career as a Republican politician. I think I have certainly decided that that's not as important to me as speaking the truth. I think the Board of Supervisors and the rest of the county government has made that same decision. But look, a lot of these state Republican senators, they don't believe a single thing of this. But they get lots of angry emails and they get lots of angry calls who have been listening to this by national figures, and they feel like they have to respond to it.
What, the Sellers call this a grift disguised as an audit. An audit should always be in air quotes here when we talk about what's actually going on inside that room. But what do you want to see happen now? What are you asking for today and going forward with how this audit in air quotes is treated?
Ooh, thanks for giving me an ask. I appreciate that. Two things. Stop defaming my employees. Stop saying we broke the law without any evidence, and stop besmirching all the hard work that they have put in. The second thing would be, come on out, Republicans. The water's warm. We'll get out here first, and I'm happy to take some of the flack. But, now's the time, because if we don't push back against this now, we're going to be doing this all the way through 2022 and possibly through 2024, so long as some of these figures stay in national politics. And the irony that I pointed out is that many of these local politicians who claim there was widespread fraud in Arizona's elections are signing up to run for re-election in 2022 or signing up to run for even higher office. And it's just, your actions speak louder than your words. If you're going to invest your time and your money, you clearly believe in Arizona's elections. So stop peddling these lies just for donations.
And very last question, when this audit, when they do release whatever they're going to release, how should we look at their results?
Well, I don't know what their goal is here, because when you hire somebody, when you hire a company whose CEO is somebody who believes in the Hugo Chavez theory that he rigged American elections, just a very large percentage of the Arizona population isn't going to buy any of it. So I don't know who this is helping at this point, but it's a black eye for Arizona.
Maricopa County recorder Stephen Richer, I appreciate you joining us. Just one correction. We'll have county recorders on from all over the country. We love county recorders. We think you are the heroes of this last election. We really appreciate the work you're doing, and we applaud the courage it takes to stand up and just do your job.
Hugo Chavez? I know. And more and more people are turning on these Lulus in places like Arizona, Stan. Lori Roberts wrote at the Arizona Republic, the supervisors in Maricopa County took the Arizona Senate cyber ninja auditors to school on how elections are run. And as for Senate President Karen Fan, the person who ordered this bizarre proctological exam of Maricopa County's vote, they made her look like an absolute fool. Actually, they didn't make her look like a fool. She did that all by herself. Wow. On the other hand, she does inspire late-night comics. I don't know how you... I don't know how you unring the bell of Trumpism. I think some people are just lost. And we're never going to get them back. Because the failure to prove the conspiracy only proves the conspiracy, and that turns into a feedback loop that just gets louder and louder and louder and louder until it's all they can hear. I had a note from Suman in Arizona. Subject line, my apologies. I'd like to take a moment and just apologize to everybody on behalf of Arizona, mostly because I have no idea what the fuck else to do. Well, apology accepted. It's certainly not on you, Suman. I'm sure you're not. I don't think you're writing the program and then secretly running out to, you know, vote Republican. And if there's any apologies due, I mean, you got Kyrsten Sinema, the curtsying senator. But I got Joe Manchin. Of the soon to have, I don't know, Mount Manchin. I kind of like the idea. Frank in Iowa wants to know, how is Rush, the truth detector, doing today? Well, you know, every day is today in hell, Frank. Eternity in hell is every day. And so today, Flush Flimball down in hell took an infinite number of reverse pineapples right up the ass. While filleting Adolf Hitler, who didn't enjoy it because, well, he was wearing a barbed wire condom. So suffice to say, Flush Flimball, with half his brain tied behind his back, he's not real happy right now. But he is still dead. I know. This is Titanic Tuesday stuff. I mean, the generals and the chickens and Flavio's. I heard the Maricopa County recorder this morning. Jesus, unreal, incinerated chickens. Why did the chicken cross the road? To eat up the real winning ballots for Donald Trump in Arizona, and then got incinerated when it got across the road. That's why. Stephen, New York, also struggling with his equanimity. So, did dead Hugo Chavez reanimate himself and is stealing our elections? Is Hugo Chavez actually rigging elections from the grave? If so, is he dead but acting alive? Undead, alive again? Zombie? If he's now alive, does that mean we have to risk the return of Rush? See, great minds think alike. And all kidding aside, I think somewhere out there, and most of this crap probably originates on 4 and 8chan, and it's just a great big game of punk to see how many just stupidly unbelievable things a Republican will believe. Because, you know, they're the believing bunch. They're not fact-based. They're not rational or science-based. They believe things. Yeah. Like Hugo Chavez stealing elections and bamboo fibers in Chinese ballots and chickens! A rootin' tootin' chicken hawk, that's what I am. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much, Cat in Ohio. Thank you so very much. We have actually, we're getting very close because we were 295, no, not 295, 195 away from finishing Friday, and now we're 145 away from finishing Friday. That's awesome. Thank you so much. God, it all helps so much because, well, because there's a shit ton of bills, that's why. And I don't mean the bills for pool boy for Agnes's pancreas-shaped swimming pool either. No. Thank you, Kat. Thank you. Hitler's barbed wire condom, asks Ralphs. Wouldn't that be painful for Rush? Well, what do you think it is for Hitler? Oh, I mean, you know, not that we care. That's the whole point. It's painful for everyone involved, except maybe the observers. Yeah, they got that coming. And I don't say coming, because the barbed wire's inside, too. Ew! Mm-hmm. Hey, let's run over to the stress line and check in with our buddy Dave in the Blind. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Robin. I sent you an email earlier about Christine getting out of the nursing home.
Yeah, I saw that. That's exciting.
I have a collection to make.
Yes.
She had a meeting with the staff. They wanted to keep her for another 4 or 5 weeks, and they've been mistreating her. I mean, she's had stuff stolen. CNAs who told her, oh, it's not my job. And when she complained about being cold in her room, she was told, and I'm not kidding, maintenance doesn't work on the weekends. You'll just have to suffer. So at the meeting, she told them, I want out.
Okay, do thermostats also not work on the weekends?
I guess not, because the CNA is always saying, well, I'm not a nurse and it's not my job. Of course, if I were running that place, she would be correct. It's not her job because she wouldn't have one. But Christine made it clear, she's already been back to the trailer once. She can maneuver around the trailer just fine. She can see things okay. She said it's like looking through a curtain, like a gauze curtain. And she's just waiting for her to get cleared to go to Chicago, where they will teach her things like daily living skills, like cooking and stuff like that. And Braille, they're going to teach her Braille, and they're going to give her a guide dog. And so she's going to learn to work with the dog. But Robin, she's been going at this hammer and tong for weeks because she just wants to be done. I know I told you before, sometimes she does a little too much. Yesterday, she decided she was going to teach herself to tie her shoes. So she got a shoe with laces and figured, I'll spend an hour. 4 hours later, when they brought dinner, she stopped. And she said, I lost track of all time, but I can tie my shoes. So I'm looking forward to her getting home.
God,
even
I know
if it's
she,
just for a short
and, period. I know she will be too.
But my sister-in-law Kay convinced her to give her until the 1st of June so that they can try and get the ramp to the trailer built for her. And that's funny because Chris and I are going to Muncie. My nephew Cameron's graduating from high school. And my sister's throwing him a little party on the 30th. And I missed his sister's graduation party. And Christine wanted to go, so my brother Bob's going to come up and or come down and get us. And the irony is that she's going to go out on the 30th and move out on the 1st.
Wow.
But I want everybody to know, I sent a picture of her last week when I saw her. It's got her with her cane, and she's just excited. She's just floored by all the support and love that she's been getting.
I'm so glad.
And I had to thank my friend Jerry for drawing up those powers of attorney. Because that's really helped. And, you know, it's like he said, that's one of the reasons he became a lawyer. He said, so he could do stuff like that.
Do something good for somebody, right?
Yeah. Right. He said, that's one of the reasons he became a lawyer. Because he grew up with dirt poor being the rich uncle. And, you know, people kind of looked down on him when he was a kid. But he wanted to do something. And hell, at one point, JCPenney wanted him to be their general counsel. So.
Wow.
But he turned them down. He said, you'll be out of business in 10 years. Because you won't listen to any advice. You're doing the same thing over and over and over again. And, yeah. So, I texted him. And Christine wants to call him after she settled in back in the trailer. She wants to give him a call and thank him for all his help.
Lovely.
And she was talking about calling into the program. So what I'm going to do is when she gets settled and she feels good about it, I'll email you ahead of time. And then we'll just call in and she can talk to you then.
Oh, that'll be wonderful.
So keep going. And as far as Hugo Chavez and Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, if you can sort that out, that would be the best thing that happened all night.
Well, see, the thing is, I think it's Rush and G. Gordon Liddy have put their little noggins together.
Down in hell, yes.
They're fighting.
Yeah, I forgot G. Gordon's down there.
He was an
evil genius from the Wile E. Coyote school.
Well, Hugo, he's probably down there with him because he was no wonder kid either. But I finally figured out a name for their battle, the battle for the soulless of America. And thank you.
Welcome.
And will somebody please sober Giraffe up? Get him a large coffee. He's having some problems tonight.
Ah, Giraffe was a mess today.
Oh, I really, it's sad to see a giraffe go bad. I don't know what to do.
When good giraffes go bad.
I can't be young.
Next on Cops. Bad neck. What you gonna do? What you gonna do? No, that's just bad. No, can't do that. No singing. Don't shoot even the hole.
There's a Star Wars on YouTube crew following the men and women of the Imperial Military. and it's got a bunch of stormtroopers running around the desert, some in high heels, to the tune of Bad Boys.
Oh, God.
It's very funny. If you look it up, Star Wars Troops on YouTube, it's probably still there if they haven't taken it down because of copyright infringement. Although I still say that comes under the fair use, under parody. But
well, I got something here for you. You may find interesting.
Okay,
and it actually. It comes from a publication in Taliban, Indiana, namely the South Bend Tribune. Now, that really is the newspaper in South Bend. That really is the newspaper in South Bend, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. My cousin's husband teaches at graphic arts at Notre Dame. And so, yeah.
Well, fortuitous. It was fortuitous that I had you on the phone when I saw this story. Because I wanted to make sure it was a real newspaper and it wasn't, you know, The Onion or something like that.
Yeah. The Tribune is a real paper.
Okay.
It's so not that, like the Hoosier Onion.
So that means this is a real news story. You've probably heard, Dave, that, you know, Brood X of the... I think somebody at Dave's door.
Oh, that's okay. It's just my pizza. It'll keep for a couple of minutes. You were saying?
Okay, so we're all eagerly, well, some less eagerly than others, but waiting for Brood X of the 17-year cicadas to emerge and start making their racket, right? You've heard about that. They're due.
Right. Every 17 years, they're looking for an event.
Yeah. And so it could happen anytime. Well, according to a scientist, and this is an article from the South Bend Tribune. John Webb of the Evansville Courier and Press wrote that Gene Koritsky, a professor at the College of Mount St. Joseph. Well, that's the photo credit of the adult periodical 17-year cicada that goes with the article. And I had no idea, but apparently cicadas are the burnout acid freaks. Because the article from the South Bend Tribune says, this month, as billions of Brood-X cicadas emerge from the dirt in Indiana and more than a dozen other states for the first time in 17 years, some of the bugs will suffer a horrific science fiction-like fate. A fungus... Listen, okay, anybody so inclined, just stop now. Don't eat the trippy cicadas. Just don't. A fungus laced with the same...
The zombie locusts.
Yeah, pretty much. A fungus laced with the same chemical as psychedelic mushrooms will invade their bodies and eat away their insides until their abdomens crack, fall off, and get replaced with a ball of white spores. Dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone is now done. Because they're either bombed on psilocybin or under the control of the fungus in some other way, the cicadas won't even notice. With missing butts and full hearts, they'll forge ahead with their only reason for existing, finding a mate, and reproducing. Of course, that last part will be impossible with half their body rotted away. Don't eat the cicadas. I don't care. Even if it's got a ball of white spores instead of a butt, listen. Don't do it. Just don't. Dude, I had some kick-ass cicada last weekend. Wow.
Robin, you need help. You really need help. eating zombie cicadas, and it's not even Halloween.
And apparently they trip balls because it causes males to both sing and flick their wings, allowing them to attract any partner they can. And basically it turns them into trans cicadas.
Yes. And they will mate with any cicada that they happen to meet, regardless of gender. I've read about this.
Massospora is apparently what causes it. And,
evidently, there's some real concern.
Well, the thing is, this whole process was discovered by a bug scientist at my alma mater, Dave, Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, and Ed Yong.
Wow.
And they were full of psilocybin, these cicadas. But here's where it gets dangerous. Because some of the cicadas were also loaded up with amphetamines. And that's where the problems always happen at the party. You got some, like, laid-back people who are, like, you know, just tripping and, like, you know, looking at the stuff and listening to the stuff. And then there's always a few assholes on amphetamines that come along and just ruin everything for everybody.
Robin, I got a call coming in.
Yeah, okay. Say hi to Christine. Bye. And yeah, okay, good deal. See you, Dave. It only stands to reason that the methamphetamine cicadas would be discovered in West Virginia. Yeah, and it really is a real news story. And then it goes into the part, and let's go ahead and finish off dinner in the Central Time Zone. Despite how objectionable it may sound to some, eating cicadas is definitely a thing. Professor Lill said high-end restaurants in Washington, D.C. incorporate the insects into their menus as a seasonal treat. One of his colleagues even refers to them as tree shrimp. And a scientist guessed that devouring a large number of infected bugs could have some kind of mind-altering effect. But keep in mind, people bold enough to snack on cicadas usually do so right after the... Never mind. But now we understand why all of these anti-trans bills have been proliferating all over the Confederacy. Because, well, you know, if trans cicadas can do it, imagine what trans humans could. There's another anti-trans bill that's become law, signed into by Governor Lee down in Tennessee. Get this, and I'm going to the Skype line just in a second. But just dig this. Because of a law signed into effect in Tennessee, it will now be the law in Tennessee that businesses that let trans people go to the bathroom will have to post a big, bold sign saying, "This business lets trans people go pee-pee and poo-poo in public restrooms. You've been warned." No, really. They debated the law in both houses of the Tennessee legislature. And because we've got to protect people from the PP and trans people, that's now the law in the state of Tennessee. I wish I was kidding. Wholesale discrimination against an entire class of people. And an encouragement that public facilities not allow those people to use public facilities. Where have I heard that before? Maybe we'll go into that some more in a minute. Let's talk to Steve. Hey, Steve.
Good evening, afternoon, or wherever the fuck it is. I sent you an email, probably a kind of a heavy email, about the notion of proportionality.
Yes.
You know, I have... I studied international humanitarian law when I was in school, and a brief little primer on that. Humanitarian law and human rights law are two completely different things.
I can imagine that could be the case, yes.
I mean, humanitarian. When you say international humanitarian law, that's war crime. There's a number of international crimes. There's the four, what are called the core crimes, which is the first and most and the worst one is called the crime of aggression, which is that's the one that essentially, I think it was Justice Jackson who said that encompasses all other international crimes. Then you have war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. So that's what international humanitarian law is, and I it will make sense what I meant when I said that. But I've been thinking about this proportionality stuff. You know, Potter Stewart said that he didn't know what pornography was, but he could recognize it when he saw it. And, you know, I started thinking that the term proportionality or the concept in light of defining, quote-unquote, pornography. And what occurred to me is that while I may not be able to define pornography, anybody pretty much could tell you if I use the word pornography, you could, you know, almost anybody could say, if I were to say, when I say pornography, what do you think of? And people would have any number of things that they would call pornographic, whether it's, I mean, my frank opinion is that pornography, what's the most pornographic things are not sex-related. They are, generally speaking, violent. They're more violence, to me, is the most pornographic thing.
Yeah. And, of course, the distinction between pornography and obscenity.
Right. But the bottom line is that, generally speaking, everyone or many would have a concept of, you know, hey, when I say pornographic, what comes to your head? What are some words that describe that? Most people would be able to come up with something. And I think, generally speaking, everyone would pretty much agree what things constitute pornography. There may be, or not maybe, there would probably be, no, there would be degrees. It's a scale of what people might find pornographic and what people might not find pornographic. But I think the category would be, people could pretty much agree on it. Proportionality is one of those things, particularly in the context of war. And, you know, and let's not get into this overly legalistic notion of war. You know, war is, you know, armed combat between or among parties, whether they're state actor parties, they're non-state actors. You know, and I use it specifically regarding what's currently going on in Israel right now. And I started thinking about what is proportionality, and in the context of war. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's a meaningless term. I mean, the purpose of why does anybody go to war? Well, there's essentially two reasons. There's the aggressive war, which is what Germany did to Poland on September 1st, 1939, which is, you have something we need, and we're going to take it from you, and we are more powerful than you, and we're going to do that. There is defensive war, or self-defense, which is what Poland tried to do.
And I would argue we're way deep in the semantic weeds now. But in some ways, self-defense should be referred to as self-defense and not war.
True. But it's like when I attack you and you attack me, that's self-defense. And then it kind of morphs into quote-unquote war when each side starts attacking the other.
Right. I think we might help if I mean if it's okay if I jump in on this. We could if we talk and you know some of this stuff is you know goes back to like Aquinas and the just war theory and all of that stuff. But there is aggression and there is self-defense.
Correct.
And the and the concept of war occurs in the in the conflict between the two.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, and the reality is, well, I would say this is that when it came to Germany and Poland, I don't know that Poland ever was any kind of aggressor because the disparity in power and the disparity in armament was so stark that Poland had, there was no chance that Poland was ever going to push Germany out of Poland. However, in an instance in which you have two relatively equal powers, say Germany and the Soviet Union, while Germany invaded the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union was able to fight back to the point where who was the aggressor and who was the defender becomes meaningless, because in certain initially Germany's the aggressor. Well, in instances in which the Soviets fought back, you know, the Soviet Union would be the aggressor. But you understand what I'm saying is it gets to a point where it's meaningless. And certainly for those involved who shot the first shot, it's meaningless for people involved in the conflict.
Sure.
So you think about, you know, what is the purpose of anyone? Well, like I said, generally speaking, it's to get some shit that you've got, or, you know, that's one reason, or people go to war, you know, again, for any number of reasons. And think of this in terms of the Palestinian, the Israeli conflict right now. And this is why I find I'm almost gotten to the point where it's not even worth talking about that over what's going on there, because it's I think when you have sides there who can't even acknowledge why one side might be pissed off, when you're the point where you think no matter what you do is right and no matter what they do is wrong, there's nothing. You're an impasse. If you look at Israel, for instance, Israel looks at that, or let me step back and be more general here. What is then the purpose of going to war? It's to make whoever you're attacking to stop doing whatever they've done to you. And in that process, you're not going to worry about, oh God, did I bomb a civilian? Oh God, did I do this? Oh God, did I do that? And it's absurd, I think, to think that we can... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. It's absurd to think that we can place rules or we can try to civilize something that's so unbelievably uncivilized to the point of absurdity. You know, okay, great. You're not, you know, in war, you're not supposed to attack civilians. Okay. That's for all practical purposes, stupid. You know, as I said in my email, when somebody is killed or somebody dies, there's still a family there that does not have a daughter, a mother, a husband, a father, a brother.
Yeah, that's the fundamental failure of anything that's after the fact, whether You know, because, you know, you sat through some of the same stuff I did in school. And the first thing they teach you is, look, nobody can make the problem not be a problem, because you have to work. It's in the past. You know, all the civil law can do is award money damages for human harms, for instance.
Right.
But I don't think we chuck it altogether, because we're making judgments about what is and is not okay. I think part of the reason that the United States can't or maybe feels constrained not to complain about, slaughtering children, is because we have a history of being so fucking good at it.
Well, and I know this sounds horribly cold, in war it doesn't matter.
Oh, no, William Tecumseh Sherman, war is hell, ma'am. Didn't you know that when y'all started this?
Yeah, the other thing too is this gets back to the notion of proportionality. That's a fool's errand.
Well, no, I'm not so sure, because I mean, just bear with me for a second. Mm-hmm. We've seen it in action in the Second World War. Some member of the French Resistance would slit an SS officer's throat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans would respond by machine gunning the entire village.
Okay.
Clearly, and they're civilians, so clearly that's wrong, at least within most of the moral framework of the so-called modern world. And it is wrong because it's civilians and it's disproportional. I mean, I guess we'd say, okay, well, you know, you want to take the mayor and blow his brains out in exchange for the murdered Gestapo officer. One for one. But the lack of proportionality and the willingness to torment civilian populations is the hallmark of what we deem to be awful. I mean, it's like, to a certain extent, it's like Justice Jackson at Nuremberg saying the Germans need to understand that they are being punished not because they lost the war, but because they started it. It's the question of the aggression. And when we're talking about proportionality, I don't know how you can say that hitting a building with precision-guided munitions where the person flying the fucking missile can see exactly what it's going to hit in real time. I don't know how you can defend that when it turns out that you killed, you know, 9 or 10 kids.
You can't. But my point is proportionality. It's a fool's errand. It's meaningless. In combat, it doesn't mean anything. Well, I mean, so what, you know.
Okay, then, but see, I mean, we are in a real trick bag here, Steve, because what does combat mean? I mean, really, is a three-year-old Palestinian child asleep in its crib when the missile hits and kills it? Is that child involved in combat? I mean, clearly, the person who took the order and executed the order to launch the missile is involved in combat against the three-year-old. But the three-year-old is functionally incapable of engaging in combat against the person sitting in the bunker launching the missile.
But so would a soldier who has a handgun. Here's my point, and I just want, I hope people don't get me wrong, and I'm saying that I don't have a problem with that. I hope people will understand that I'm not defending.
I don't think you are.
What I'm saying is it doesn't matter.
It's a level. So, it's angels dancing on the head of a pin.
Oh, you're trying to civilize something.
The barbaric.
Yeah, it doesn't work. So what if it? I'm going to say this. So what about it killing a three-year-old? And I'm not saying I don't care about the three-year-old, But I'm saying in the context of battle, that's no worse than killing a combatant. Because at the end of the day, it's a dead person. Instead of focusing on, my thought is, instead of focusing on trying to make that which is uncivilized civilized, stop. It's nothing more than, as a friend of mine would call it, intellectual masturbation. It doesn't matter. Focus on ending war instead of trying to make war palatable.
Guess what?
It's never going to be palatable. Never.
And it's never, you know, despite the pretzel logic of Thomas Aquinas, it is never going to be anything Jesus would do. Okay? You cannot Christianize war, no matter how many troops are walking around with Gott mit uns on their belt plate. There is no such thing as Christian war. Those were attempts to rationalize the unbearable.
I think what he was doing was, and I've not read him, so I don't. What is it? I've not read it. Was it Aquinas or was it? I thought it was Augustine who came up with
this. Oh, it is Augustine. It is. I don't know why I said Aquinas.
But it's like trying to. In an extreme where I don't want to go that because that's
no, it's a hell of a rabbit hole. But usually the people relying on that, on the just war theory, are the people who want a war no matter what. I mean, I'm so old I remember 2002 and people bandying that shit about as a reason to launch attacks on people who had never done shit to us.
I mean, from a, I think, for instance, you know, I describe, and this is all I'll say about this, so we can get back to the other topic. I think it would be, you could argue very legitimately that the polls in World War II, that their resistance against the Germans would get close to saying that their hostilities were just. But again, I don't want to. You know, that's a whole other.
Well, no, it's a kettle of rotten fish.
Yeah, and so back to the proportionality thing. You know the situation you described. Why is that not proportional?
What, machine gunning the whole town?
No, the thing with the kid in the building you talked about in Israel,
yeah.
Or in that conflict. Why is that not proportional?
Because they didn't just kill the one kid, they killed two or three other kids, and they killed some moms and some dads and some aunts and some uncles, none of whom were Hamas.
But again, I don't know why that's not proportional.
Because we have reduced it, or we attempt to reduce it to some sort of a mathematical ratio.
Exactly, that's my point. It's a fool's errand. The question is ridiculous. It doesn't matter.
And you know what? You can call it a fool's errand. I'll call it a fig leaf. It's a fig leaf that foreign governments use as an excuse not to take action to physically stop it.
Okay. I'm not disagreeing with that. What I'm saying is, it's ridiculous to even ponder, because the bigger issue is war and violence to begin with.
Sure. And again, I agree with you. And I think that it is, I think it's gross and it's bloody and it's some really, really third-rate penny ante sophistry to talk about proportionality when the answer is it's not okay. It's not okay to kill children. It's not okay to kill civilians because your excuse is but Hamas. Okay, just like it's not okay to kill moms and dads and children just because your excuse is Houthi rebels. But it comes down to that old aphorism that when all of your problems look like nails, all of your solutions will look like hammers.
Okay.
And for me it becomes a question of, why are we supplying the hammers?
And again, I don't disagree, or I agree with that. But it's ridiculous for us to try to say, well, you know, it's not proportional. Had they attacked X, it would have been proportional, and therefore it would have been palatable or even okay.
Right. I mean, and you know what? You know, we had the story a couple of months back about how the Israelis murdered the chief nuclear scientist in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is to this day not a lot of evidence suggesting he was working on a bomb. Everything they're working on is necessary to firing up a nuclear power plant, too. I mean, it's just a fact. But the Israelis went to great lengths to murder this guy, and they did so covertly, and there was some serious talent involved. I hate to describe it as talent, but it is. So if you want to talk about proportionality, we know the Israelis have the ability to get inside hostile cultures and kill anybody they want to. I mean, deep in the heart of Iran? Really? Yeah, they did. So if you want to talk, I mean, so this is where a talk of proportionality. You know, if the Mossad had gone in and there'd been this whole Corleone, you know, I do reject them, and there's this chorus of dead Hamas leaders, you know, shot on the massage table, you know what, you know how it is in The Godfather. Liberal talker compares Israel to The Godfather. No.
Well, I've never seen The Godfather. Don't hit me. Yeah, I know.
And you complained about Scott not seeing The Big Lebowski. Never mind.
I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
But anyway, the point is, if Mossad had gone in and killed a shitload of Hamas, you know, operative adults, the entire world would have been ho hum. And in this case, you know, my God, the leadership of the Sunni Muslim states is going ho hum. Because, well, the Palestinians are in many ways as hated and loathed and despised as any cultural group on earth. And that sucks. That really blows. And they find themselves as alone as the Jews in Europe did beginning in the mid-30s and continuing through the point where the entire world pretty much knew what was going on. And, well, you know, he started a war. We got to finish the war. We can't help anybody until we got the war finished. And by the way, that SS St. Louis that's off the American coast, yeah, send it the fuck back.
Well, I don't know. I just...
Maybe I'm kind of all over the board. I don't mean to be.
No. All I'm saying is I don't... I think it's ridiculous to even ponder proportionality in war. It's just, you know, in the context of war, I don't think bombing civilian populations or anything like that should be, I don't want to say I don't think it should be illegal, but I think it's stupid to make it illegal or to try to claim this.
Well, I think it's, I'm back in Potter Stewart territory. I think it's obscene.
I agree. But I think the notion of having a, having, you know, prosecuting somebody, I mean, I could see one quote unquote international crime is that when you start a war, that's prosecutable. The problem is, look, there are no innocent anyones on earth. Nobody's innocent.
For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God.
Okay. But the point is, this, you know, somebody at one point was a victim and somebody at one point was the aggressor. And what it, you know, whether or not X attacks Y, you know, X can always justify it and say, yes, but 1,000 years ago, Y attacked us. And we're just getting back. And they could, you know, somehow, I guess, justify it, say it was whatever. But the point for me is, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't, it's absurd to say you can't attack a civilian population. Or it's absurd to say in a war, well, your response has to be proportional. It's absurd because what is proportional? You know, you could, I think it would not be, it would be logical to say proportional is whatever makes you stop doing what you're doing to me. And instead of focusing on this silly, you know, scale of, okay, well, you did this. Okay, I need to do a little bit of that to even it out. And that's how I see this. And I think, you know what, I remember, and I don't know if this is apocryphal or not, but I remember learning, a million years ago, that the guy, that Gatling invented the Gatling gun, and part of his motivation was to basically say, I want to make war so disgusting that people lose their... It's so awful that that just makes them stop wanting to do it. And I had a conversation with a professor about what I emailed you about getting rid of these international crime, getting rid of the notion of humanitarian law and war crimes. And he says, you know, that's not, you're not the first person to say that. And I've pretty much gotten to the point where I think those things are meaningless. I think war crimes.
I will to a certain extent agree with you because the fact of the matter is things like war crimes laws as they are defined and stylized are effectively meaningless because they're never used. They're only used on people who are too weak to resist their usage. Okay, we can haul in a Serbian butcher and put him on trial, but he didn't kill nearly as many people as George W. Bush did in Iraq, in a war that he began illegally in the first place. But you don't see George Bush going standing in the dock now, do you? So it's essentially meaningless. A country that is strong enough to resist it. The law itself is a cipher. Agreed?
What's a cipher? I've heard the term. I don't actually know what it means.
It's a nothing. It's nothing.
And I would go farther. I would go one step further and say it shouldn't exist. there shouldn't be the notion of, oh, it's, you know, you bombed a civilian population in a war. So what?
Yeah, but make no mistake, we would drag an Iranian Ayatollah or Mullah into the International Criminal Court in a minute and be completely oblivious to all the other times that we ourselves should have been hailed.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying.
And frankly, the best way, it's the law of unintended consequences. The best way to keep anybody from ever doing that shit to you is to have some nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and I know, and look, I understand. I'm not under the impression or under the assumption that ridding ourselves of war is easy, possible, doable. But I just I find it fundamentally stupid for us to say.
Well, hold on, and you know, you take me into some deep shit, right? War is not, war as we understand it is not impossible. It doesn't have to be this way.
Well, I agree with that.
Most of the things that we recognize as the horrors of humanity, again, came with our move as a species to sedentary agricultural society. It's just a fact. Hunter-gatherers never had world wars. Hunter-gatherers may have had something resembling war. And the more complex the society gets, the more likelihood there is that wars will become bigger. I mean, we know in this continent, in this hemisphere, there certainly was war among the indigenous peoples, and they fought over the same thing, the scarcity of resources. And eventually, just shortly before Columbus arrived, warfare became ritualized, and that's just a sign of the, and it's a pretty solid sign of the growth of an actual civilization when we're talking about sedentary agricultural societies. Okay. But the gang, if you're talking about the Neolithic or whatever, the gang in Cave 1 did not necessarily go to war with the gang in Cave 2, and the gang in Caves 3, 4, and 5 jumped up to defend Cave. It didn't work that way. We're primates, and primates engage in aggression behavior. It's when it leads to slaughter. We developed that as a talent only after we settled down, started living in high population density areas, and felt like we had to protect the dirt from those guys. So, like Ishaq Rabin said, I think we can learn to write in another color besides blood, but we have to want to. And the problem we run across is that we like it. It's been commented upon by everybody from the ancient Greeks to Mark Twain. We like it. We like the brass bands and the fancy uniforms, and we never think about what a filthy mess they turn into when the wearer thereof has lain dead face down in the mud for a week.
Well, I think it's even, think about some of the sports that we enjoy. Football and boxing and rugby and...
Well, you know how George Carlin described football.
Yeah.
First down, Pennsylvania, Midwest to go. It's a conquest game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real estate acquisition game.
It's a war. Let's be honest here. I mean, it's on the gridiron.
Wow, how many times did we hear Keith Jackson say, "Oh, it's war in the trenches, Frank"? And Frank Broyles would reply, "Keith, these are some of the finest athletes, these young men, that I think I have ever seen."
But
rumbling, stumbling, bumbling.
But getting back to the war thing, the proportionality thing, I just, you know, I think, you know.
It's something that millionaires in the media can talk about and well-heeled people in politics can talk about so that they don't have to talk about the fact that it's fundamentally not okay to slaughter three-year-olds in their crib over a real estate fight. And that's why we have to talk, that's why we talk about it in these terms here as opposed to using their drawing room language.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go so far as to say this. I don't have any more problem with, you know, the bombing to kill the three-year-old than I do with the bombing to kill a soldier. I don't have any more problem. I find them both so disgusting that one is not worse than the other. I'm sorry, it's not. And to try to say, well, it's worse to kill this person in war versus that civilian versus this combatant versus, in the end, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And I think I could argue that actually killing an adult soldier is worse than killing a kid, because the kid is just the kid. The adult soldier had a wife, probably, or a husband, and kids, and he or she was supporting other people, and people were dependent upon that person to provide food and shelter and love and all that. And again, I hope, you know, what stinks is someone could come into this conversation late and say, what the fuck is Steve saying?
Yeah, well, yeah, and think that you're somehow saying, you know, okay, yeah, kill the kiddies.
I'm saying I don't want any of it to happen. And I think we're fooling ourselves to even talk about this shit, because it doesn't matter in the end.
Right, because waging war for peace is like fighting for is like fucking for chastity. Sure.
You know, there's something I remember Malloy. I listened on a Malloy show many, many, many moons ago, where somebody called in, was talking about one of the conflicts, and oh Jesus, you know, it's Hamas firing rockets and Israel firing back. I mean, that script that's probably happened 10 times in the past 20, 25, 30 years. And this person called in and Malloy said, what, do you know how many Palestinian children did the IDF kill today? And, you know, they killed, you know, 78. And how many did the Palestinians kill? They killed 9. And Malloy said, killing one is too goddamn many. I'm not going to play that, you know, which lives are worth whatever. And he said it was a fool's errand. And that's where I come down on it. I think if I were to look at Nuremberg, for instance, you know, let's take what I'm saying here. Let's take it to its logical conclusion. The logical conclusion is that what happened in Nuremberg, or what happened in World War II, maybe I could see prosecuting Germans who started the war against defenseless countries, but you know, decimating civilian populations, I don't find that any worse or better than decimating, you know, killing 100,000 civilians is no different than killing 100,000 soldiers. It's just one of them.
Maybe I'm a rank sentimentalist, but you know, we use.
I don't like either one. I despise either one. And I'm in the same way. It just sounds too much like this metaphysical balancing act, and what we're doing is we're trying to soothe our guilt and give ourselves excuses to not try to eliminate.
Not our guilt, our apathy, Steve, our apathy.
And we're trying to make excuses for, well, you know, if we do go to war, well, we'll just make sure we don't bomb civilians.
Yeah, how do we do it?
I mean,
how'd that work out for any number of Afghan wedding parties?
Wedding parties, or, you know, look what we did in Dresden, the firebombing Dresden, or Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Sure. But we're the good guys.
But again, in the context of war, I don't think that should be illegal. I would just rather not have war. And I think the focus should be on that instead of fooling ourselves into thinking that we're somehow, well, you know, we're gonna draw some lines here and say you can go across that line, but whoa, over here, no, there it's too far. That attacking those people is worse than just attacking those people. And that just sounds repugnant to me. It's disgusting. You know, and I think it soothes people to say, well, you know, if somebody else has a gun and they're shooting at me, then I should have a right to shoot at them. Or it's not as bad as if somebody doesn't have a gun, has a gun shooting at me and I kill them. That's not as bad as if somebody doesn't have one and I shoot them. And all I'm saying is I don't find any difference. That making that silly distinction is nothing more than, you know, people wanting to rationalize the unrationalizable.
Sophistry.
God bless you. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That was well played. Wait a minute. But it is. It's what Socrates would have recognized as sophistry. It's philosophical parlor games.
Yeah. So instead of focusing on trying to limit, you know, we're going to limit how we kill people. We're going to limit how we kill people and whom we can kill in war, rather than saying, well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we just not have wars? And there's a part of me that says, you know what, if we just let, you know, if we really took the all's fair in love and war attitude, one of two things would happen. Either we would get to a point where we would say, wow, this is really bad. We got to stop this. Or we say, you know what? This is something we're willing to live with.
And that's where we are.
And when I say willing to live with, it's, okay, well, civilians are going to die in war. Oh, well, you know, there's going to be a genocide. Oh, well, you know, in war, that's the way it happens.
Right, and see, years and years and years ago, Steve, when, I forget what sort of cataclysm of homicidal fury we were in at the moment, but we were having a hissy over some brown person who had killed Americans. And, of course, the right wing over on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, were, you know, beating the drums and beating their chests and it, what have you.
And Bruga 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 fine.
Yeah, yeah. Bruga Bruga Bruga, yeah. And I just pointed out along the way that, you know, much as we say that, it's desperate killing terrorists, I said the bottom line is, they're fucking rank amateurs. They can't begin to touch the civilians that we've killed. Shit, one bomb, and every Muslim terrorist in all of Islamic fundamentalism, they're pikers.
Yep.
I mean, they're just not, they're not near as good at it as we are. I mean, my God, we can kill innocent civilians with real skill.
And they got to go to the trouble of, like, strapping on dynamite vests and shit? Oh, we're so over. No, we're past that. We're going to let a machine do that shit for us. We're gonna teach some pimply-faced kid who's really good at video games to fly drones from an air-conditioned trailer in the desert somewhere near Las Vegas. And, you know, might be a wedding party, might be a terrorist. What the fuck? Nobody's getting hurt here. Anybody getting hurt here? Can I fire? Yeah, fire. Bang!
Yeah. Well, I keep doing this because I don't want someone to come into the middle of this.
Well, somebody probably will, but if they bother to listen to the entirety of the conversation, you're not saying, fuck it, let's just wage war against civilians. You're saying, let's not wage war.
Let's not wage war. And let's not try to fool ourselves into thinking that we can make war less violent. You can't.
I mean, when you look at the Levant and Palestine, to paraphrase Mao, real estate war is real estate at the muzzle of the gun of a gun. Because these are all real estate deals.
Mm-hmm.
And the author of the deed is said to be that great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. I saw a meme that's been circulating online, and it shows some indigenous Americans on horseback from a century ago. And the caption says, "So, you say that you own the land because y'all were there first." Well, you know, all animals are equal. Some animals are more equal than other animals.
Yeah. Yep.
And yeah. I think in part that was what Orwell was getting at with Animal Farm.
Yeah.
I mean, there was commentary on socialism, communism, Soviet-style communism, et cetera, but some of these things are basic. Some of these things are basic concepts.
Yeah. I agree.
And you know, and the thing is, the histories. You know what passes for history. You know, some of the first evidences of genocide are to be found in the first five books of the Old Testament. I mean, Canaanites and the Edomites and whatnot. You know, they.
No, I know. I was just going to say the Canaanites.
Yeah. Hey, y'all are fucked. We don't live here, but y'all are fucked. God gave it to us.
Yeah.
And these are origin myths that are written 1,000 or more years after whatever the actual events were. And as Joseph Campbell pointed out, we make myths to explain our own behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, we make myths to explain our bad behavior. I mean, that's where the concept of the vast empty continent comes from. When we talk about the myth of the colonization of this hemisphere, and particularly North America. Oh, there was nobody here. The Spanish couldn't get away with that because they ran headlong up against the most advanced civilization they'd ever met in their in their existence. They'd never seen anything. What? You've got a room where you go to take a shit and water carries it away? Wait a minute. You people wash your skin every day so you don't stink like we do? Heresy! Burn them! In the name of Jesus and the Pope! And so the Spanish couldn't get away with that. But we, in North America, the English and the Dutch primarily, oh, no, there's nobody here.
I'm not trying to minimize it. I laugh at the absurd.
It's absurd, but it's true. Note coming in from Jude. Your and Steve's probing dialogue. It's clearly evident from history that the focused action of war is a controlling faction, one that seeks by force. It's the instruments that are used extract from the process of human evolution. Whereas we who seek by utilizing the innate power by aligning our consciousness offer peace, which houses the most refined power. I often ponder how many intellectually understand, but we're so much more than our minds. For instance, women's standing houses simplicity of being. Think of the times one is thinking of a distant person when that person connects, or the deep gut warning that something has or is occurring in a family or friend, and it has. Clear examples of aligned collective consciousness. It's a self-actualized way to journey through this human experience as one is alive and awake every single moment. Excellent dialogue, so thank you both. Be well, Jude. And she's right, those little things do happen every day. Mm-hmm. It happened today. So, just by way of a story, Agnes is puppy sitting right now. She's puppy sitting the grand puppies over across the river. And this has been a brutally busy day. Started at about 5:30 for me, and I've gone nonstop since. Hell, I'm only at 14 hours. I mean, it's not like I'm 16 miles on the Erie Canal or anything. But I went over to get her because we had to do things. And one car's in the shop, so we're... And anyway, I went and got her, and as we drove past this little building on the road into Oak Hill, I pointed to it, and I said, you know, I can remember being little. And back then, US 19 and the Gorge Bridge weren't here. And you would have to go all the way down the mountain and turn left and then come back up a different part of the mountain just to get to Fayetteville and Oak Hill. And it was a day's driving. And so the little store that I pointed out, I said, you know, that place has been here since I was born. And, you know, they sold fresh produce and like cold cuts and just sliced cheese and whatnot. And my grandmother always liked to stop there. And so we drove on back home. Then we had to turn around and go back. And before we left, Ferg had heard some news that there'd been a wreck and the bridge was backed up for miles. And that would have, if I'd gotten caught in that, I wouldn't have made the appointment at 2:00. It's been a busy day. And so lo and behold, having talked to Agnes about how, you know, you had to go down the mountain and go back up the other side of the mountain, we had to go down the mountain and take that alternative route, had to go down the mountain to Chimney Corner. Isn't that quaint? Had to go down the mountain to Chimney Corner and then come back up Cotton Hill and cross the New River a different way. And I said, isn't that weird? We were just talking about it, and here we are recreating a drive that I remember taking as maybe a 4 or a 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm... went on and told her about the car we were in. It was a white 1966 Chrysler Newport 4-door sedan, the very last of the fins dying away in design. And my dad had bought one in turquoise. And so back up here in West Virginia, my aunt, my mother's sister, bought one in white. And so that it was in that car that we rode on that hot August day, all the way from right here where I sit now, down the mountain to Chimney Corner and back up Cotton Hill and through Fayetteville and stopped at that little store that I had mentioned to Agnes in the morning. And that's exactly the kind of thing that Jude says, when she, means when she think of the times one is thinking of a distant person when that person connects. Or the deep gut warning that something has or is occurring in a family or a friend, and it has. You know, I guess, and I guess what, Jung called that synchronicity, didn't he? Is that what he was talking about, meaning by synchronicity?
I thought synchronicity meant, maybe. I'd have to look. I don't remember.
And by the way, I kind of expected at least a virtual cowbell out of you the other day on Facebook. And I didn't get it.
Which?
When you posted the meme that said abolish the police.
Oh, yeah.
And I responded, dude, they broke up when Sting went solo.
You know what? I probably, my aunt put something on there, and that probably got my attention because my aunt, her son-in-law, which would be my cousin's husband, is the cop back in I'm not going to say where.
Yeah.
who wouldn't get vaccinated because he wanted to hear more about it. And he's not only a beat cop, he's also has a immunocompromised child, and it just that gets my ire up. And my aunt, my cousin is clearly pro cop, and you know the whole Blue Lives Matter, even though she was a Bernie person. So figure that one out.
Some of it beggars reason and logic, for sure.
I understand her, you know. And my aunt was like, they abolished the police, and my aunt's like, what, and go back to the Wild West? And I'm thinking, well, let's see here.
I mean, I think they had, I mean, you know, you had to give up, you had to take, unstrap your gun belt to walk into the saloon there in Dodge City.
Mm-hmm.
And Deadwood and you know, Tombstone.
So, you're right. That should have been a virtual cowbell, so.
I thought it was quality.
Yeah, it is quality. It is quality. I forgot what I was saying.
Well, see, that's the other thing I do to people. Steve, I'm going to try to get Silent R. Lamar's been hanging out and waiting. I'm going to try to get him on for a couple of minutes before we end the program. But it's awful good talking to you. It always is.
You as well. You as well. And we need to continue on that other stuff we talked about. You need to get. I need some answers from you.
Yeah, I know. I got to get my head out of my ass. It seems like anymore. The more I need to sit still and think and work, the more I have to go and do.
Believe me, I get it. I get it.
It's maddening.
Have a good night. You hear me?
You too. Safe going home, Steve.
Take care now.
See you now. Bye. Our pal Steve in New York. And as promised, Lamar the Magnificent.
Well, you know, you bring me on after you just make the statement you got to get your ass out your head. I always send you emails with the popping sounds that I have to do, pulling my head. Head out my ass.
I don't know how it gets there, but it's...
Well, you know...
I'm more limber than I thought I was.
You know, Robin. You know what?
Yeah.
My friend for life, regardless whatever the bullshit goes, I met you as one species... You changed to another species?
No, I'm still Homo sapiens. Don't worry about that.
Oh no, you gonna go to the third level? Okay, fine. I have an engineering background. We can do this for an hour or two, but I don't want to go there. One of the paternity of Steve's out of New York. He was a lawyer.
Yeah,
you had on earlier.
Yeah, that was him.
You and I and him need to have one time when I call in. Because the last time I called in was the Friday on the porch.
Yeah.
I understand everything he's talking about, but he only has one view of the situation. And I respect him for his one view of the situation. I understand being a black man in America, and you know, I'm gonna use the word that nobody likes to use, homeless. I am homeless. Africa did not want me before a certain point of time in history, before apartheid. I was a homeless individual in a land of people who did not like me. How did I survive? That is survival skills that are wrapped up in the Negro DNA. I don't want to argue, but I don't hate nobody. I dislike a lot, but I don't hate nobody. But when I see what's been done to me and my Native American tribe, individuals called American Indians, what's been done to them, I can see it. Everybody's all upset about Israel. Well, you know what? Look at every time Israel has a blow up or a fist fight or they're shelling or doing this and that, what is the original problem? Well, the original problem is Israel decided to take 5, 6, 8 miles of own Palestinian land and claim it as their own. Ooh, nobody wants to talk about that. That's bullshit. That is what the problem is. Okay, Israel wants to be a sovereign nation. Fine, be a sovereign nation, but give a portal for Palestinians to live as Palestinians. Oh, no. That's more than what the American Indian population got. Nobody wants to talk about how Israel has cordoned off, stopped, and squeezed off the Palestinian population. And then they sit there and they talk this, they talk that. You know what? If America really wants to be a biter in this thing, I will tell Biden, start giving military aid to Palestinian people. Form a government and we'll give you military aid. Oh, do you think the Republicans are not going to have a baby? And they can't have a baby because they don't want to support the baby because they don't like abortion. So they're going to be butt-fucked big time. But the real thing is, I hate war. I miss Vietnam by a couple of months. I have cousins who have, I don't even want to go into it, but war is a bitch. And the one thing about this bitch about war is collateral damage. Nobody wants to talk about collateral damage. Collateral fucking damage is the problem. Now, when you put collateral damage on both sides, the people who are involved in the bullshit will come to an agreement. Okay, the Palestinians shoot some skyrockets over into Israel. They slap that shit down. They go over there and they shoot their retaliation. Schedule bombs, the best technology America can give them. They wipe out everything. Here's the thing I got to say. Real good. Do the Palestinians have a tank? Do they have one fucking tank that could cross the line and fight with Israel? The answer is fucking no. As long as the American people want to abide by Palestine, I mean, not Palestine, but Israel, oh, we got to protect Israel. You know what? You need to do your American history, which you are not getting by me being an educator. American history, when did Israel and that situation start? 48, 58, 52? Not that long ago. And I'm going to tell you right now, as a black man, guess what? white people couldn't marry black people until 1967. Duh.
Loving versus Virginia.
Duh. I don't even want to go there. See, Americans have gotten to the point where, you know what, this pissed me off. Let me give you a little background about me, personal background. I was working for a company. They sent me over to the Netherlands, Europe. I have never been off the American continent. Ooh, I was just as happy as a bug, as a fly on shit. Okay, I mean, I was just ecstatic. But when I got over there, I realized Americans are being spoon-fed the bullshit they want you to know. And I'm going to skip a lot of this shit. I had to tell a group where I ate regularly. I didn't vote for this asshole Reagan. I didn't vote for him. I voted for him the first time, but I didn't vote for him the second time. I am not a Reagan. I'm not a Republican. I am American. I'm black. Look at me. They hung my ass. My people. And then they realized, oh, you know what? You're right. See, what Americans don't understand, the world knows our history. American people, if you want to be dumbified, be dumbified. Be dumb as a stump. In fact, we need to flip you over so we can look at the termites eating at your roots. But the point is, what America does is categorize record and put there for everybody else to know. American can do whatever she wants to dumbify her people. I stood up and said in a pub in the Netherlands, 1982, here's an American president. I didn't vote for him. But do not ban the Americans. The American people are what this. And those Dutch and German and Polish people looked at me like, should we string you up now or string you up later? I was scared shitless. And the American white people need to understand, the world does not look at us as they are portrayed on television. Fox News is the worst fucking program that you can look at. Back when I first was, okay, in 83, they used to tell us, these areas you should not go to as an American. They don't tell you shit. There is no advisory of travel. Oh, you went to this, and you got that. Well, that was your fault. Blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. When does America become the stewardess of the American people? Under Republican rule, that's bullshit. And that's where it is. These people who want to be Republicans, these people who like to be Republicans, these people who want to be Republicans, you know what? Kiss my Gluteus Maximus black ass and let me know ahead of time so I won't use toilet tissue so you can get some legitimate crud. Fuck the dumb shit. This is dumb shit. These Republicans are killing America as they want to manifest famine. They want the money. And you know what? The root of all the evil is money. If everything you do is based upon money, you need to be eradicated.
Now, the book says the love of money is the root of all evil, but that may be quibbling. Hey, Lamar, we got to the end of the program, but I'm glad I got you in, my friend. We'll talk more later, okay? You take care of yourself, you hear?
You too, my buddy. You too, my buddy.
All right. Love you
as always.
All right. Love you, man.
Bye.
Bye. And so, really, the 3 hours flies by. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you, Colin.
Colin jumped in there earlier, and I was about to screw up and not mention it. Thank you, Colin. That takes us down to $7.95. So we took a little bit, we took a bite out of the deficit. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Get your vaccine. Keep doing what you're doing. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance among people who are not vaccinated. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes up to you and offers you a cicada to eat, say, no, I don't trip no more. And avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.